for WFHB in Bloomington, this is Hereabouts,
a collaboration with the IU Asian Culture Center.
Hello, welcome to Hereabouts, Asian American Midwest Radio. This is part two of our civil rights series for January. I'm Joyce Lam, and today on Hereabouts, I'm with Abby Ang. Hello, Abby. Welcome, and thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
We're really excited to have you. Could you tell us a little bit about yourself and your connections to Indiana University?
So I'm currently a PhD student at Indiana University in the Department of English, and I've been here for about 6 years. So I came here to do something like a combined master's PhD program, and I'm currently working on a dissertation in medieval literature. And I'm out of coursework, so I'm just focusing on finishing the dissertation while I do all of my activist and political work.
So I know in 2018, you were recognized for being the recipient of the Building Bridges Award and have been known for showing leadership skills in organizing several key protests, including a response to the Charlottesville incident. Could you tell us a little bit about your past endeavors in civil rights in addition to your current work? I would especially like to know about your protest work.
So I started doing this protest work in about shortly after the election in 2016, after Trump won. And so there were a lot of grassroots organizations sprouting around Bloomington in particular. I think Bloomington has always had a wealth of activists who have been working for many years over a variety of different issues. But after 2016, there was kind of like a surge in different groups like Indivisible Bloomington. There was a group for a while called Swing Left, and all different kinds of groups that sought to oppose the Trump agenda and what they saw as a very harmful political regime. And so how I got started was mainly in Indivisible Bloomington. They started early in 2017 with a handful of people who had a call-out meeting and wanted to find out what were some protests and projects that we could work on going forward. And one of the projects that we settled on was opposing Trey Hollingsworth and holding our elected officials accountable. So trying to get responses out of Trey Hollingsworth, have him answer questions about his voting record. And I think around the time there was a lot of concern about the ACA and about healthcare, whether the ACA would be repealed or not. And Trey Hollingsworth had and still has a reputation of dodging people's calls and meetings, and he hasn't had a public town hall yet. So one of the first protests I organized was at the Liberty Ballroom in Bloomington, where he was meeting with a lot of Republican donors, and he wanted to talk with other Republicans about ways they could support him, I suppose. It cost at least $40 a plate to attend, so it wasn't for the average person. So a bunch of us put together a protest really quickly. We got signs, and we themed it mainly around healthcare and asking him why he was voting against taking away healthcare that a lot of us needed.
So the Trey Hollingsworth protest was what sparked your interest in civil rights, correct?
Well, it was an event that showed me I could organize protests like that. Before that, I hadn't had much of a public face in terms of politics, and they needed a media spokesperson. And so I stepped up and said, hey, I'm very happy to help pull this together and also to talk to the media. And that role gradually evolved over time. But I did know from the start that I wanted to be involved in some way. The other aspect of being involved in politics and protest was here at IU. After the election, a lot of minority students in the English department wanted to come together to just be with each other and figure out ways that we could continue to advocate for each other. I think a lot of us felt very uncertain, and at the time, and there still are few of us people of color in the department compared to white graduate students. So we wanted to find a way to kind of come together, figure out ways that we could advocate for the needs of minority graduate students to administration and other aspects of IU.
as a minority, especially in this political climate as of late, one is more prone to experience microaggressions or just blatant racism. So what I'm wondering is, how does dealing with this connect to your work? And do you have any stories in which you could share with us today?
Yeah, absolutely. So I have a kind of two-part answer to that question. And the first part is, just as a teacher at IU, when I started going here to Indiana University, I came from Rhode Island. I was born in Rhode Island, and there were definitely a lot more diverse perspectives and people of color where I grew up. Whereas when I moved to Indiana University, it seemed that there were a lot more white students than I was originally accustomed to. So one of the challenges that I faced was having an all-white classroom. And so as a teacher who is teaching writing and elementary composition 131 to a lot of these white students, I quickly found that a lot of them were around Indiana. A lot of them hadn't been exposed to different perspectives. A lot of them hadn't had classmates or teachers who were maybe politically different or of a different skin color. A lot of the challenges was having to handle difficult situations with these college students who were maybe having their first class and learning about the right ways to talk about racism, to talk about social issues. So, for example, microaggressions were very common. Students would say stuff like, I've never hung out with Asians before, or like, Asians look the same to me. And yet they would just say that and they meant well, but it was really hard to, at first, to talk to them, take them aside and say, hey, that's not actually how you use this language. Here's maybe a more appropriate way of saying this. Maybe don't say the N-word in class, stuff like that. So for them, they definitely mean well, they just haven't had exposure to these ideas. And so as a teacher, I had to learn to juggle with that while also feeling the effect of these microaggressions. And so in that sense, some of the groups that I've been involved with at IU, one of them is the English Graduate Solidarity Coalition. And so that's a group of what we affectionately call ourselves, Tiny Angry Asian Women, because it's mainly us four. But having that network of other Asian American women and even international students in that group has been a real help in dealing with these challenges and talking to each other and supporting each other through this, and even coming up with teaching strategies.
You shared with us a story about these microaggressions. Now I'm wondering, how does this translate into your work currently or in the past?
Oh, yes. Yeah. So how it translates to my work. So in the English department, we wanted to put together the English Graduate Solidarity Coalition to help with pedagogical workshops. So over the past year, we've had a number of different workshops where we've talked to other graduate students about how to handle microaggressions. And we noticed that while there was a lot of resources in the Wells Library, for instance, with the Graduate Mentoring Center, we noticed that a lot of these resources weren't completely transparent or available. So just on that level, trying to get people to find out more about these resources, but also letting people know that they have a place where they can talk to other graduate students who are teaching 131 in how to deal with racist student evaluations, or what happens if a student calls you an Oriental, situations like that.
Yeah, I myself am exposed to these microaggressions or words, and I've been called an Oriental whilst even grocery shopping one time during a late hour. It's just so fascinating to me where these words just are so common in such an area, and just witnessing that when you're far away from home or something. But to backtrack a little bit about exercising your civic duty, but I'm amazed by your ability to connect others with a common goal in mind to form groups with a purpose. And so I'm wondering if you could speak more about your protest work in lines of a civic duty, such as your Charlottesville protest. I was wondering if you could speak a little bit more about that today.
Yeah, so I definitely have organized a lot of protests or been involved with different kind of protest work over the past year and a half, or a couple of years, I guess. And one of those big protests on campus was the Charles Murray one. And that, along with Charlottesville, I think are part of the two biggest gatherings that I've helped put together with other people. So the Charles Murray one was when Indiana University's one of the political organizations invited Charles Murray to come talk about his recent book and his work to the political science students. And supposedly it was an event that would be open to the community, but because they knew that it was an event that would draw such controversy because of Charles Murray's views about IQ and how IQ was related to people's racial background. So for example, like arguing as a sociologist that African Americans have a lower IQ than white people. They knew that his talk would generate a lot of backlash, so they kept the event secret for a very long time. And then not only that, but they hired a big police presence to come on campus. They closed down Franklin Hall for the entire afternoon, and they only let people in with tickets, and people could only have one ticket per person, so they couldn't get tickets for their friends. Another rule that they had was that people weren't allowed to bring in laptops or other recording devices, and it was a very strange event. We wanted to draw attention to the way the event was framed and the way that people in administration were being so secretive about the event. It ultimately looked like they were giving a platform for white supremacy even if they didn't intend to. So we gathered in large numbers outside the building to protest and draw attention to the way that people like Charles Murray were being shielded by campus. This event was something that definitely made a lot of people of color, marginalized students feel unsafe just because of the views that he espouses and the way that his views have often been used to uphold white supremacy. He had never really backtracked on those views in any way. Another thing that we learned that was that the event was not a free question and answer session. So we also wanted to draw attention to the ways that issues like free speech are more complicated than they might seem at first. So a lot of people were saying, hey, you should let the guy speak, because this is really a free speech issue and you're destroying his free speech. And we said, hey, that's not really the case, because while he's being allowed to speak, the way that people are not being allowed to respond to his questions, the way that the Q&A was framed, was that people could submit questions in writing, and then a moderator would look through those questions and decide which ones were the best questions that he could answer. So it was definitely not in the spirit of free inquiry as the university stated its goals were. Well, the university at first made a big deal about how free inquiry was important and we should allow people to talk about their views, yeah, no matter how disgusting they are ultimately. But no one was really able to question him. They didn't allow people to question his views or challenge him in any way. So the question there that I had was like, is this really an issue of free speech, and with what strings are attached to this free speech that he has? Is it really free speech if they're keeping this secret, if they're not allowing similar protection and airtime for marginalized students or for marginalized faculty? What kind of resources are being offered to him that are being denied to others?
Yeah, there's a lot of hypocrisy in that situation that I'm appalled at. So interesting to hear about this. You're listening to Hereabouts, Asian American Midwest Radio. On today's episode, we have Abby Ang, an English graduate student at Indiana University, who is speaking about her experience as an Asian American and how that translates into her work in civil rights. But I was also wondering if you could tell us about what other acts of civic duty have you embarked on since you've been at IU, in addition to protesting, or if there were other protests that you would like to speak about today.
So protests are nice in a sense because you can organize a protest and often a lot of people will show up if you've publicized it well enough. But then at the end of the day, people have kind of vented their feelings. They've had a chance to hear people speak. Hopefully, it gives a big media splash in terms of holding elected officials accountable. But another important aspect is also the daily grind work. So things like teaching students about how to handle microaggressions on a smaller scale, but also off campus, doing things like voter registration, canvassing door to door to out in the community to find out what people's thoughts and feelings are about different issues. is helping to educate people in that way. So over the past year, I've gotten involved in electoral politics. So what that means is I first got involved in a congressional campaign for the 9th district. And so one of the people running at the time was Dan Cannon, and I started volunteering on his campaign for a few months until May in the primary, and then after that, I started working on a state rep campaign for House District 62, and also helped out with the Indiana Coordinated Campaign, which is the Indiana State Party, canvassing for Democrats up and down the ballot. And most of the work I did, in addition to just outreach and getting organizations involved, was to just canvass door to door. And I canvassed maybe almost every day for several months.
Wow. There's so much dedication in what you do. Could you actually tell us more about what you're currently doing?
I'm still involved with Indivisible, and I'm now the membership director of Monroe County National Organization for Women. I'm on the board of Democracy for Monroe County as well, and so I've been trying to make a mark not just at IU, but out here in the community. I've kind of grown to love Monroe County and learned all about the different people living here and different organizations, and it's such a vibrant community. Going back to the microaggressions question, one thing that I found challenging as an Asian American person is that there are definitely established organizations that are largely white, and it's a little bit hard to get a foothold in that organization if you're an outsider. So what I'm trying to do on the board of these different organizations is identify other people of color who might need a friend, that sounds cliche, but who might need mentorship, or who might want to be introduced to other people in the community, who might want to get involved but feel that they don't have a way in or just feel alienated by walking into a room or a meeting and seeing just a sea of unknown white faces who are already friends with each other. So I think that there's a lot of work to be done in Monroe County politics more generally in terms of welcoming in other people, marginalized groups.
Yeah.
I'm really happy as of a couple weeks ago, we elected our first African American Democratic Party chair, Jennifer Crossley. So I'm really excited to work with her as she's got a lot of ideas on where in the community to go for outreach that maybe traditionally the Democratic Party here has overlooked. So I think people like her will bring a fresh new voice to the party that we desperately need.
So you mentioned in the past exercising your voice, and to do that through your day-to-day actions. You mentioned that you went canvassing every day for months, which is so admirable. And I wonder, as an Asian American or even a minority for that matter, how does one make a splash in a community that is predominantly white in exercising your voice, exercising their civic duty, becoming more involved, joining these groups if they're a little intimidated to? How does a minority, an Asian American, how do they become more involved in this and not be intimidated?
I think it helps that a lot of groups right now know that we need to go above and beyond. We can't just continue to go to the same places for outreach that we've always done. I think it helps if Asian Americans who want to get involved see friendly faces, and I do hope that I can be a friendly face to those, to any Asian Americans who want to get involved in politics or get involved in activism but don't know where to start, or which organizations would be welcoming, or which organizations would be a good fit. And because of my activist work, I've had a lot of connections to different organizations in town, and I've networked a lot. But I will say that at the beginning, it was quite intimidating because I don't think there was anyone quite like me in a lot of these organizations. At IU, I had Asian Cultural Center, I had Asian American Studies program, I had my friends in the English department who are also Asian American. But once I ventured off campus, that became a little bit more difficult. And to this day, I still don't know that many Asian Americans working in politics here in Monroe County. If you're out there, give me a shout out. But I'm hoping that that can change soon. Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering if you could speak more about the organizations you're in and a little bit about them.
Yeah, Indivisible Bloomington is kind of my baby. It's the organization off campus that I've been involved in the most. And we still continue to work to bring accountability to elected officials more broadly, such as encouraging people to contact Trey Hollingsworth, organizing protests around that issue, keeping up to date with current events, and organizing fundraisers or dine and donates to bring attention to different causes like the border wall or families being separated at the border. And I think one of our strengths is in networking and collaboration. No one organization is the expert on any subject matter, so getting the expertise of people in the law school for the Kavanaugh hearings, getting the expertise of the Bloomington Refugee Immigration Network for families separated at the border, we work well with other people and we try to bring people's strengths together rather than speaking for any issue or any one group. So for example, as an Asian American activist, I'm not the person to speak on racism in the African American community. So I would go to Black Lives Matter for that and give them a signal boost. And the other group that I'm involved in is the National Organization for Women, and this one has a tighter focus in the sense that we focus on reproductive justice, we focus on LGBTQ rights, and it's for women and non-binary trans people to come together, meet other like-minded progressives, and work on issues that affect us. And so we have a number of different committees, like the Reproductive Justice Committee, the Racial Justice Committee, LGBTQ+, and so on. As the membership director, I'll get in touch with different organizations, try to build a network for women in town who are progressive and who want to learn more about different issues, both at the state house level and locally. And the last one is Democracy for Monroe County, and they grew kind of out of the Bernie Sanders Our Revolution brand. What we do primarily these days is to hold monthly link-ups. At those link-ups, we show a presentation, have an expert from the community come in and talk about an issue such as healthcare or gerrymandering. In a few months, we'll have Matt Pierce hopefully come in and talk about the State House and issues at the State House. So the primary focus there is educational, and we meet once a month on the first Thursdays, I believe, at 7 o'clock.
You mentioned getting involved on a community level and a state level. So my next question is, how should one engage with one's civic duty to do more for a community, whether that is one's town, city, state, or even country for that matter?
That's a really good question. There are a lot of opportunities at IU to get involved, like working with the Asian Cultural Center, helping people, volunteering at WFHB, for example, and it can be overwhelming at first to figure out where one would be able to help best, but there's just such a wealth of opportunities in Bloomington and at IU that I encourage people to seek out different opportunities. Don't be afraid to ask. Don't be afraid to ask organizations or centers if they need help with anything. I think it's good to attend protests. I definitely don't want to discourage people from attending protests, but I do think a lot of people go to protests and then go back home. And the daily grind is less glamorous. Things like canvassing and going door to door is not the most glamorous thing, but it's that kind of incremental work that matters the most to me. A protest can bring attention to an issue in a very flashy way, but after that's over, there are people who still need help, families are still being separated at the border, or haven't been reunited yet, government workers are going without pay, and so figuring out that the kind of day-to-day work, how to support people every day, not just in one moment, is what matters most, I think.
So, you're very involved in political activism, and you exercise your civic duty very frequently, and you take steps forward to ensure that you're exercising your right as a citizen, and it's inspiring. So I ask for those, maybe an apathetic citizen, for example, who may be jaded when they see news headlines of just news that seems like there isn't much progress being made, or that they're just seeing negative news to the point that they just stopped caring and they just don't do anything about it because they think, what is the point if I myself am just one person? Or they just stop caring in general because things just don't seem to be going the way that they want. How do you propose a solution for someone who might be apathetic or just jaded towards all this?
I think that's a really good question. And I think apathy is definitely something that I've struggled with on numerous occasions, especially after a point I was really wrapped up in Twitter in 2016, following all sorts of news cycles. And before I got really involved in activism, I definitely would sometimes just look at my phone and see the push notifications of like some whatever terrible thing had happened that day, and then feeling that I didn't want to get out of bed or like even contact my reps because what's the point? And it's definitely really hard here in Indiana because we did suffer quite a few losses this past election cycle, and because Indiana is pretty gerrymandered, it's really hard to keep your spirits up and not be like, hey, what's the point if we're never going to win the House or we're never going to win the Senate? So my answer to that is that this is one of the reasons why community is important for me, because thinking that I'm just one person who's struggling with this, I believe that activists, in order to remain healthy, do have to be honest about their apathy, the depression, or their anxiety with each other as well as with themselves. And so it's certainly helped me to have peers and a community who can help me when I'm feeling apathetic, or who can encourage me when I'm feeling that it's not worth it to keep fighting. What has really been helping me these days is knowing that the House has flipped to blue. So that means that even with terrible stuff happening, that there is still a chance to turn things around. For me, I feel like it's kind of in a cycle. When I hang out with people who are apathetic, like myself, it can be a bit of a struggle. Because it goes in waves, I think, like feeling apathetic and then feeling energized and feeling apathetic. So I try to hang out around people who feel energized. And then that helps me stay optimistic in those times when I'm like, oh, I feel really apathetic. I don't feel like doing anything. And in turn, like support other people when they start to feel blue about things or just kind of numb to everything that's happening.
Yeah.
But compartmentalizing is also good. So I'm like, okay, I have this part of my brain where I'm like, I gotta keep chugging, going through emotions a bit until like I feel okay again.
What I'm getting from your answer is that it's important to surround yourself with passionate people like yourself, so when you're feeling apathetic, you can find yourself coming back. And compartmentalizing probably helps, but what helps in the daily grind, like you said, is what is instrumental to the progress of it all. But yeah, thank you for sharing that. This is very important for us to know, I think, and in addition to our audience. Thank you again, Abby, for sharing your story, your experience with us today.
Thank you so much.
That was Abby Ang speaking about her experience as an Asian American minority and how that translates into her advocacy work concerning civil rights. Join us on our next episode, where we have a discussion about love in the Asian American Pacific Islander community.
You've been listening to Hereabouts.
Hereabouts is produced with the IU Asian Culture Center and broadcast from WFHB in Bloomington. Our theme music is by Eternal Youth.
Tune in to Hereabouts every other week from 5:30 to 6 on Wednesdays right here on WFHB.